Good evening, everyone. Welcome to The Blurred Line. I'm your host, Sue Shensky, and tonight we have a very interesting guest. He's a channel, author, teacher, and I guess the list goes on. Tonight we're speaking with Shepherd Hoodwin, the author of Journey of Your Soul, A Channel Explains the Michael Teachings. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I was thinking, I've read some of your book. I do have to admit, I told you this a little bit. I don't like to read the entire thing before an interview. I kind of like to hear things with fresh ears, and I don't want to take any info for granted. But I did read a little bit through, and I thought maybe we could start out with the basics. What is channeling, and how do you do it?
Channeling is something that people have been doing throughout history, but it's been called a lot of different names. It is going into some form of an altered state so that one can tune into an aspect of non-physical, non-human reality. And so it could be communicating with deceased loved ones or with spirit guides or angels, as they're sometimes called. It could be tuning into larger universal forces. It could be tuning into the consciousness of the whole, what some call God or the Tao. Mm-hmm. But basically, what most people think of when you use the word channeling is tuning into a teacher who can bring forth information that can help us grow and live more effectively.
Okay. It's pretty heavy. I mean, I'm very interested in the topic in general, and I'm interested to know how you came to find that you could do this.
Well, it's kind of a funny
story. A loaded
story.
Question.
I didn't set out to do it. I had never even really heard of channeling about a year before I started doing it. But one thing I had been doing and worked very hard at over a number of years before that was listening to my inner guidance. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that these are overlapping skills, that if you do listen to your own higher self and your own guides from within yourself, you are in effect training yourself to channel if that's also going to be your path. So I'd been on a spiritual path quite seriously since I was about 14. I was a searcher. Mm-hmm. And I had heard that one could ask within for guidance, that God would speak to us all. And I called on that when I was about 22 and I was going through something where I needed a lot of answers from within. Mm-hmm. And so I started out with asking for yes, no answers, you know, much like many people do with pendulums, where mm-hmm. they'll ask yes or no, should I do this, should I do that, and tuning into something higher. I didn't know about pendulums then, so I closed my eyes and I visualized a gauge where if the needle went to the left, that was yes, and if it went to the right, it was no. And so it started out with just concentrating really hard, and it was slow, but I would finally see the needle move over to no or yes. And then it got really fast and easy. And then I started to actually hear complete sentences from my guides. Mm. And within a short time, I was talking back and forth to them constantly, asking what I should do about things and trying to gain deeper understanding. So I did that for a number of years. And then when I was about 30, I started hearing about something called the Michael Teachings. The Michael Teachings are a body of channeled work that originated in Oakland, California in 1973 in a small private group that was using a Ouija board to access the other side. And the Michael information started coming through, and in the late 70s, it was published in what became a best-selling book called Messages from Michael by Chelsea Quinn Yarbrough. And so this was now the 80s, and I was hearing about the Michael teachings from three different places at the same time. And I thought, this is really interesting. I want to find a Michael channel. And so I was at work one day. I was working as a stockbroker at a discount firm in New York City. And the phones were quiet, and I thought, you know, I better write down my questions before I forget. Mm. And I took out a pad and started writing my questions, and my pencil kept moving, and I got answers.
Oh.
So I thought, well, that's interesting. And one of the questions that I was writing down was something that my friend Pat had told me to ask for her if I ever found a Michael Channel. So I sent it to her, and she said, okay, well, ask him this. And so I got into the channeling biz that way. That was 1986.
Wow. So you've had a lot of practice. Now, I noticed, you know, it's called, you know, the Michael Channels, but it's really not one person, correct? Or not person, but spirit or entity or...
That's right. That's right. Michael is an arbitrary name. All channeled entities have arbitrary names because you don't really need a name if you don't have a physical body.
Mm-hmm.
We use names as conveniences. But when you are non-physical, for example, when you're between lives and you come in contact with a soul that you're familiar with, you are having recognition on many different levels. You recognize their vibration, your whole history with them. Everything comes at you, so you don't need a name. But as soon as one of us starts channeling someone, we always want to know, well, what's your name? Because we need that to have a handle on them, to be able to say, I want to talk to so-and-so again. So they consented to be called Michael because they're a group of 1,050 souls.
Mm-hmm.
And the last member of the group in its last lifetime on the physical plane had a name something like Michael. So that's why we call this group the Michael entity. But they could have been called anything else, and they would have been perfectly happy with a different name.
So what is their goal? Or what is the goal in channeling with them?
Anyone who is channeled from a higher plane is also benefiting and growing by being channeled. Just as if you get a job as a teacher, you are learning about teaching, and you are learning from your students by teaching them. So it's never a one-sided thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what Michael decided that they wanted to accomplish was to help relieve some human suffering by explaining the nuts and bolts of how this all works and why people are different from each other. So that if we can understand why we tick differently, we can let go of trying to change other people so much and let go of judging them, and also let go of judging ourselves for being how we are. But we understand what is at work in our lives and how we can turn that into the most positive possible manifestation of it. So they teach us that. Now, of course, they are huge multidimensional beings, as in fact we all are. We are all many faceted, and being channeled by people like me is not by a long shot the only thing they do, but it is one aspect of what they do to grow. And by teaching us, by seeing what we're not understanding and how they could maybe convey it better, they are learning the truths that they're teaching better. And any of us who have taught knows that this is what happens.
Can you speak a little bit, I was reading about the roles that we choose. I wondered if you could speak a little bit about that.
Yes. This is the most fundamental part of the Michael teachings, and it's incredibly useful and always interesting to look at. There are seven types of souls. Virtually every religion and spiritual group believes that we are eternal souls. But the Michael teachings is one of the few that delineate the seven different types of souls. So as souls, we are not all the same. And if you didn't know that, you might assume that we are, that we're all just like drops of water in the ocean and all water is the same. But in fact, on a soul level, even the part of us that is most eternal, we are unique. There are seven different basic kinds of souls, but each of us has a profile that is unique based on combinations of many different characteristics. There are two of those seven soul types that Michael characterizes as being inspirational. They say that these are on the inspiration axis. And these two are called server and priest. One of them is big picture, or we call that cardinal, and one of them is nitty-gritty, which we call ordinal. The ordinal role is server, and servers like to inspire through serving the common good. So they like to nurture you. They like to rub your feet and cook you a meal and show you hospitality and raise kids and do whatever needs to be done with a lot of love in their hearts, at least in the positive pole.
Mm-hmm.
Priests love to inspire in an abstract, large, expansive way. Perhaps a priest would help you feel inspired to your life task, would help you conquer a big life challenge like quitting smoking. You find a lot of priests who are medical doctors, who are psychotherapists, who are pastors and ministers and nuns and so forth. They're very attracted to all the spiritual, religious, and healing arts. Whereas you'll find servers doing just about anything, but particularly hospitality types of things and working with children. Then there are two soul types that are on the expression axis. So they are about self-expression. And the ordinal one, the nitty-gritty one, is called artisans. And artisans like to express themselves through form. These are the most creative people who excel at working with their hands, with inventing new things, with fixing the plumbing or being your IT guy. Are often musicians playing in the orchestra, and they're not looking for the limelight, but they just want to do what they do with a great deal of craftsmanship and skill. The other expression role is cardinal, big picture, and those are called sages. I'm a sage soul. Sages are about communication, about ideas, about insights. So sages are always looking to understand why things are the way they are, which is partly why I'm so attracted to the Michael teachings.
Mm.
There are two roles that are on the action axis, and they are the doers. The doers in a big way, in a big picture, expansive way, in a cardinal way, are called king souls. Kings like to take on big projects and then delegate to others, and they're often in charge of things. Warriors like to roll up their sleeves in an ordinal way, and they like to just plow in there and dig that ditch or win that business contract or meet the challenge. They're the people who climb the mountain because it's there.
Hmm.
The seventh role is neutral, and it's called scholar. Scholars step back from the other six and observe. They take notes. They record their experiences. They teach. They assimilate. And so scholars make excellent teachers. You often find them in higher academia. But you find scholars, because they are neutral, in every walk of life studying. They are marked by having usually an excellent memory for facts. They're not they're not so interested in knowing why things are the way they are. That's more the sage thing. They just want to know what things are.
Mm-hmm.
They just want to learn as much as they can, and they absorb knowledge. So every one of us has one of those seven roles. But many people will say, after they hear me explain the seven types, I'm a little bit of several of them.
Yeah, I was thinking that myself.
Well, I'm a psychic. I knew it. I read your mind.
Ah.
The reason that you will identify with more than one is because we all have secondary traits. I channel charts that profile you as a soul. It might have maybe 20 pieces of information on it. So in addition to your soul type, you have bleed through from your twin soul. We call that your essence twin or twin flame. And if that soul has a different role than you have, let's say you're a sage soul, but your essence twin is a king soul, you have secondary traits of the king bleeding through and blending with you as a sage. And then there's another thing we call casting, which is a little complicated, but it basically means that you have a position in your larger groups of souls, and your numerical placement in those groups gives you some flavors that correlate with other roles. So it's more complicated than just to say you are this, because you have many, many different influences coming in. But it is interesting to see over and over again in the Michael system the number seven coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Because we also have seven colors of the rainbow, seven notes of the diatonic scale musically. Seven comes up over and over again in metaphysical teachings, and it certainly does in the Michael teachings.
That was one of my questions too. Thank you. I didn't even have to ask. Now, you mentioned a little bit positive pole, negative pole. How does that play in? There's different sides to each characteristic,
yes.
I suppose.
This is probably the most important thing to know about the Michael teachings and about life in general, that whatever your profile is, whatever your traits are, they are neither good nor bad. It's all a matter of how you use them. If you use them in a positive or constructive way, they will be beautiful. They will be based in love. They will flow. They will make you happy. If you use them in a negative way, they will make you unhappy. They will block your growth. They will be your stumbling blocks. And so the Michael teachings gives us a vocabulary to know when you're in your positive and negative poles. And so you can recognize when something doesn't feel right. If you have this vocabulary, you could say, my goal is growth and I'm in the negative pole confusion, and that means that I've taken in too much stimulation and I need to chill for a while. It gives you tools for getting a handle on where you're going off course and to bring you back on course. But if you make a cursory reading of the Michael teachings, you might jump to the conclusion that, well, it's better to be a king soul than to be a server soul. But it's not. You can be an extraordinary leading edge server, or you can be a king who's tyrannical and negative and doesn't accomplish anything worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
It's all a matter of what you do with it.
So when you pick your role, does it stay with you throughout your lifetimes? Or
yes.
Okay. So
you're the same soul type. Your soul traits stay with you in all your lifetimes on Earth. They will not change until you complete this, what we call grand cycle. So you finish all your lifetimes on Earth. You ascend through all the higher planes of Earth until you're reabsorbed back into the Tao, the all that is. And then if you go to a different planet and have a different life form, you can start over and everything could be different. But all your past lives on Earth, your soul profile stays the same. Now, your personality profile does change from lifetime to lifetime. So on a Michael chart, you'll see it's in two parts. The first part's your soul or your essence, and the second part is your overleaves or your personality. The overleaves are personality traits that overlay or lay on top of your eternal soul,
mm-hmm.
and are in this combination for this lifetime only. So you can have an inspirational soul type, like you could be a priest, but in this lifetime, this personality might be highly expressive because you have more overleaves that are on the expression axis, and that could give you a different kind of lifetime. So just because you're a pre-soul doesn't mean that in every lifetime you're going to be a doctor or nurse or minister. Priests sometimes want to be movie stars. They sometimes want to be an academic professor, et cetera, and so forth. So we can choose different traits between lifetimes to give us a greater variety of experiences. So there's nothing on your Michael chart that is truly limiting.
Now, I also was reading that there's also other layers within lifetimes as well. Your soul age?
Yes. Soul age is a very interesting idea. You've probably heard someone refer to a child with a lot of soulfulness and wisdom in her eyes as being an old soul. And in the Michael teachings, those terms are defined more narrowly to mean something a little different than that. According to Michael, when you're a brand new soul, you've just been cast from the Tao, you haven't experienced any human lifetimes on Earth, In your first lifetime, you are called a first-level infant soul. And so even though you're an eternal being behind that, in terms of who you are on Earth, you're a greenhorn. You're totally wet behind the ears. You don't know how any of this works. So you have to start out in a pretty simple environment. We don't have any brand new souls coming to Earth anymore, but we do have some fairly beginner souls. So in your first lifetime, maybe your first 10 lifetimes, your soul age is called first level infant. And after you get the lessons of first level infant, you go to second level, then third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. And then you go to first level baby soul, which is the next soul age. And you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in the first level of young. So each of these are big phases that we go through as souls as we are learning the ropes and having a variety of experiences. It's similar to what we each go through in every lifetime. So we start out as an infant, and we don't really have to do too much except survive. That's our job, is just to survive, to thrive, to grow, to get used to being here, to kind of understand the lay of the land. And that's how it is for the infant soul. You will find infant souls in simple environments like tribes and jungles. There could also be in inner city urban tribes like slums where it's eat or be eaten, and they're still learning that same lesson about survival at that point.
Mm.
And then when we go into the baby soul level, that could be compared, although the analogies are not perfect, but could be compared to being a toddler. Toddlers are learning about yes and no. They're learning about the rules. So, you know, don't touch the hot stove or you'll get burned. And similarly, baby souls are souls who are learning about rules. And so they are attracted to simpler religions, such as the fundamentalists of any faith. And they're not necessarily going to be violent fundamentalists, but they like the rules kept too simple, just like if you're a parent, you want to keep the rules pretty simple for your four-year-old,
mm-hmm.
and not give them an overwhelming number of choices to make because they couldn't handle it. Then the young soul cycle is parallel to youngsters who are exercising their ability to affect the outer world. And so you see youngsters, let's say from ages 5 to 11, they're going to school, they want to be successful. And the young soul wants to also be successful in the outer world. And so these are souls, and they may be very caring, non-materialistic people, but they will usually have a push to figure out how the world works and how to rise to the top, whether it's to be the manager at McDonald's or to be the head of a Fortune 500 corporation. So these tend to be more disciplined people. They tend to be ambitious. They tend to be real active. They bring a lot of energy to bear in the outer world. They do not tend to be as introspective as older souls, but they can be.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you're a young priest, you're always going to be concerned about the higher good because you are an inspirational soul. But you as a young priest might still be more ambitious about, say, gaining a top spot within your church than an older soul priest who is focusing on a different set of lessons. Again, one is not better than another. They are just different lessons. The next soul age turns a huge corner. It's the biggest change that a soul will go through on the physical plane. And this is the transition from being a young soul who is at the maximum of being outwardly focused to being a mature soul, which is where the soul starts plunging the depths within.
Mm-hmm.
And this is similar to the change that happens when a youngster becomes an adolescent.
I was going
to
say, it's like junior high.
Junior high, it's relationships, it's emotions, it's ups and downs, it's drama, it's intensity. Very, very different. And the average human being on Earth now is in that transition from young to mature. And this accounts for a lot of the changes we're seeing in the world now.
That's why we're all so nasty to each other.
Well, you know, people do go to extremes.
Yeah.
And on Earth especially, we like extremes. We are, we're an intense species. The human species has a lot of aggression. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't mean that young souls are necessarily cruel to one another. But as we move into the mature soul cycle, humanity will become more compassionate, because the mature soul cycle is all about, I feel what you feel. Mm-hmm. It's the development, the beginning of the development of empathy. And so it's not that young souls can't be kind and appropriate and caring. They can be. In fact, there's a book that was a bestseller recently called The Better Angels of Our Nature. And he proves that over the last post-war era, violence and cruelty and all this backwardness has dramatically dropped. Mm-hmm. We may not think that it's dropped because the things that are still going on make the headlines every day. But he can prove it with hard science that it has dropped dramatically. And this bodes well, and this also indicates that we are moving into a mature soul cycle. It'll probably be another 100 years before we firmly settle in to first level mature, where we are definitely working more on our communities and caring about other people's needs and taking care of everyone. But it is happening. And you can validate this by just looking at the Oprah phenomenon. Oprah probably could not have happened 50 years ago,
right,
or 80
right.
years ago. But she has been our mirror, as she has been waking up to things like the pervasiveness of child abuse and what you do about it, and all the spiritual things that she has been teaching humanity. We've been following her awakening with humanity's own movement from young soul to mature soul. Now, the last soul age is called old soul, and old souls are more like college-age adults who are getting more laid back. They're more cosmopolitan. They're thinking more about the big picture. So it's not so much about you and me and our relationship, but it's you, me, and our context. So it becomes more philosophical, whereas a mature soul artist might have a huge amount of angst and intensity about needing to create the masterpiece. The old soul artist might be like, oh, I'll get around to it tomorrow. It doesn't matter. You know, life is good. Everything's fine. So they're probably not going to build as great a civilization as young souls and mature souls will build. But they tend to be laid back, as I say, warm, at least when they're in their positive sides, open, relaxed, and seeing things in a more, you might say, a more spiritual thing.
That is very interesting, and it's a good spot to take a break. So we will be back in a few minutes, and stay tuned, everyone.
Hi, I'm Charlize Theron with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Almost all the puppies for sale at your local mall were churned out by breeding facilities called puppy mills.
Constant confinement drives the dogs mad. They are impregnated continually until they can no longer produce a litter.
If you choose a dog from the mall, a dog you could have saved from the pound will die.
Contact PETA to learn how you can make a difference at 757-622-PETA or visit PETA.org.
And welcome back, everyone, to The Blurred Line. This is Sue Shensky, your host, and we are speaking with Shepherd Hoodwin regarding the Michael channels. And when we left off, we were discussing the different levels of your soul age, and Shepherd was explaining those. And I have a question. You know, 6 and 7 comes up a lot, and you had mentioned that as well. Why is that?
Well, this universe is based on the mathematical principle of the 7. So in this universe, you'll find the 7 coming up over and over. Also, the number 12 is real big. So in the musical scale, we have the 7 primary notes, but we have the 12 halftones making up the chromatic scale. Mm. So 7 and 12 are two big ones. As to why God decided to do it that way, I don't know. He didn't consult me. So. I just knew that he just thought, hey, let's do a 7 universe.
And I like 7, so.
Said, okay, yeah.
Now, why do you think it is that we don't remember what role that we've chosen? Is that part of the quest?
Well, there's 2 reasons that we don't remember who we are as souls. Mm-hmm. Because very small children do remember a lot more than most adults do. Mm-hmm. You'll find babies, when they're first starting to speak, will say things like, Mommy, do you remember when I was your mommy and you were my baby? I hear this all the time.
Oh.
The children do remember their past lives. They do remember what it's like in the spiritual realm that they've just come from. They often describe it. Sometimes they miss it terribly. The reason we forget is twofold. One is that if we remember too much about our past lives and our plan on the other side, it might be too much information. It might distract us mm-hmm. from what we need to focus on here. And also, we do want to test ourselves and see how much we've really learned on a deep level, mm-hmm. not how much we remember consciously. But for example, we want to find out, have I really learned how to love people who treat me badly? Mm-hmm. And so we go in forgetting that that's what we're testing, and then we find out what's really going on a gut level with us. So it's a good way for the soul to test itself by not remembering. The other reason we don't remember very much is because the physical plane that humanity has created has such a dense, heavy consciousness that it's hard to maintain a more ethereal kind of awareness when we're in the body.
Yeah.
We get pulled down by the undertow of the harshness of human reality. So, you know, by the time we're 7 years old, our communities, our teachers, our parents are trying to drum into us what they think reality is. And so we do forget for a while. But if we awaken spiritually, we can remember again.
So that kind of leads me into my next question, how you determine what your role is.
I channel something called Michael Reading Charts, and there are a number of other Michael channels who do this material as well. And so if you wanted to have me channel it, you would go to my website, which is called summerjoy.com, and you'd click on the brochure. It would give you full instructions for that. But basically, you would send me a clear photograph of yourself. You would send me your birth information and your complete name. If you've been to another Michael channel and you've had some of the material already given, then you would tell me what was given and what your validation is of it. And you would then get a chart back, and it would have about 20 pieces of information. It would include your role. It would include information about your twin soul. It would include your various numbers that show where you are in your larger grouping. It would show whether you're higher in male or female energy, which is either more goal-oriented or more process-oriented as a soul. It would show you your speed of vibration as a soul. And then on a personality level, it would tell you what your goal for this lifetime is, what your mode is, the way you run your energy, what your attitude is. Like, are you a cynic or are you an idealist, for example? There's 7 of those. It would talk about your body type and the sorts of other body types that you are likely to be attracted to. It'll tell you your soul age. It will tell you what your chief obstacle is. So that means which of 7 stumbling blocks are the big one that you're working on in this lifetime. Mm-hmm. Could be arrogance. It could be impatience. It could be stubbornness or one of 4 others.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's great information. It can change your life to have this information. It's sort of like getting the owner's manual that got misplaced when you were born.
Now, I do have a I'm getting an echo. I apologize to everybody. Now, I'm a paranormal investigator, and we go to homes and investigate for spirits, and I know we go through different lifetimes, but I guess what I'm kind of asking is, does your life end when your physical body dies, or do you continue on your goal until you reach it?
Well, we are eternal souls. So who we really are never ends. It never began, really. It's eternal, goes back to something far beyond our comprehension. Now, the human being that is called Shepherd Hoodwin is in this particular formulation for this lifetime only. And there are certain parts of Shepherd Hoodwin that that die when the physical body dies, like the body. So the fears that I had because of this body are gone, because the body is gone. Mm-hmm. There is still a part of the soul that could be called Shepherd Hoodwin, who is based on what was created in this lifetime. And so a part of me as Shepherd Hoodwin lives on as a subpersonality of the soul that gave birth to Shepherd Hoodwin. If there is a ghost situation, that could be a soul, usually a very young soul that got traumatized or got addicted and got overly attached to something and won't let go of the physical lifetime that they've just lived. And that's called being earthbound. Mm-hmm. So let's say someone was addicted to drugs and psychologically is not willing to give up that addiction, that person may stick around. Or let's say someone got murdered, was taken by surprise. That soul who's earthbound may not even know that she died. She might think she's still alive. Mm. And invariably this would occur with souls who are not very well developed. And probably their guides have come to them and tried to get them to let go and move on, and they weren't willing to do that because everyone has free choice. There can also be leftover etheric substance that's like a tape recording of that person's life. So you're not really contacting something with volition, you're contacting a tape recording. Let's say someone was in great pain as he was dying, and you tune in and you just hear this moaning going on over and over again. There may not really be much consciousness there. It may just be more of a recording. Or maybe it could be a combination of the two where the soul somewhat moved on but left a piece of itself behind.
I kind of feel that same way as well. And so it's good to have some validation. Now, what about animals? Do they have the same sort of growth?
Yes, but not in exactly the same way. Animals are a lot more sophisticated than we give them credit for. But animals do not have what the Michael teachings call sentience. They have sentience in the sense that that word is normally defined, in that they feel very deeply. They have thoughts. They have things they like. They have things they don't like. They form attachments, all of those sorts of things that are a big part of what is also being human. But where non-sentient animal souls differ is that they do not engage in purely intellectual function. They would not sit down and make a 5-year plan. They would not make a budget. Mm-hmm. They would not analyze their past and their future. And so they're intelligent, but they are not at the level of complexity that sentient souls are. There are, however, more than one sentient species on Earth now. Mm. There's humans, obviously, but even more sophisticated and complex intellectually than humans are the cetaceans. These are dolphins and whales. Mm. And of course, they have a very different life experience than we do because they live in water and they don't have hands with which to manipulate the environment. But they're actually more advanced than humans are in their consciousness.
I'm curious, that there are so many different ways to channel. And I was wondering, you know, do you prefer one way or another?
People channel differently based on what they're most comfortable with and on what they have agreed to do with the souls they're channeling before their lifetime began. The first Michael channels used a Ouija board that was comfortable for them. But after a while, it became too cumbersome. It's one letter at a time. It's slow. It takes a lot of people to take down the letters. And later channels started channeling by speaking aloud or by typing. And also, it's possible to channel things other than words. There are artists who channel art. Mm. There are musicians who channel music. There are dancers who channel movement. Even athletes could be channeling, could be assisted by other souls. So channeling is a very vast range.
How does one determine that they are actually able to do it? I mean, is something that you seek out, or does it find you, or a combination of both, I guess?
If you have made an agreement before you were born to be a channel, you'll get tapped on the shoulder and you will start doing it. You will feel the urge to do it. You will learn about it. You'll practice. If you did not make an agreement before the lifetime began, you can still choose to do it. And there are books that are available that will coach you. The training, as I said at the beginning, for being a channel is not terribly different from the training to be a good psychic or to do other kinds of intuitive work. So if it's something you want to do, then you practice. But channeling can change your body. It's not something that people would want to do lightly. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like if you decide that you want to become a concert pianist, you're going to have to do some work.
Definitely. Now how can it change your body?
If you are channeling, particularly if you're channeling from one of the high planes that vibrate a lot faster than the physical plane, then as they come into your body needs to be rewired to be able to handle that so you don't blow circuits. And you can become highly sensitized to a lot of things. So it varies from person to person. I've heard a lot of different stories about what happens to your body if you're a channel. And also, your body might be different in the first place if you have agreed to be a channel. You might just be born different. Okay. So you could be stronger in some ways and weaker in others.
So is it a physical change?
There can be physical changes in your body from channeling, yes. And of course, there are plenty of psychic changes as well.
You teach channeling, correct?
I do.
Mm-hmm. How does that work?
The people who come to me for channeling coaching are usually people who have already had some success and they want some refinement. And so I have them channel for me. They might write out some questions ahead of time to give me questions that I can ask them while they're channeling. Mm. And then I'll just coach them through it. I'll say, well, I'm seeing this, and why don't you try this? Or maybe slow down a little bit, or you need to be a little better grounded here, or ask them this, or, you know, a little left sort of thing.
Yeah. This just opens up, you know, even more questions that we will absolutely not have time for. Now, I know you gave your website on how to reach you if they would like to, you know, speak with you personally. You do a lot of individual work with people, correct?
I do, yes. I do various kinds of sessions, including channeling, intuitive readings, past life therapy, coaching, etc. And again, my website is summerjoy.com.
This has been so very interesting, and I really, really, really appreciate you coming on the show tonight. It was a learning experience, and I continue to learn as I make my way through the book. I'm pretty excited to read it, and it's already blown my mind, and I haven't even read as much as I would have liked.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show, and you know, maybe we'll have to have you back to discuss more, because there's certainly much more to discuss.
I'd love that. Maybe after you've read the book, you'll have more questions, and I would definitely be up for that. People who are interested in reading Journey of Your Soul, a channel explores the Michael teachings, can find it really anywhere. It's in print. It's in ebook. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it in Barnes & Noble's and their bookstores as well as online. So it's out there.
Great. Well, thank you again so much. And thanks, everybody, for listening. And come back next week. We will be talking about Ayurvedic medicine. It will be a very interesting show. Thanks again and have a great night.